From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the Anunnaki of Nibiru with Gerald Clark. By the way, I apologize for a bit. I may sound like a frog tonight. Too much airplane flying. Japan's nuclear agency has upgraded the severity level of a radioactive water leak at the Fukushima plant from 1 to 3 on the international scale. Highly radioactive water was found to be leaking from a storage tank into the ground at the plant. Now, this was the first classified as a level 1 incident. Now they've elevated it to a level 3 on a 7 scale. Not good. One of the biggest tragedies I've ever seen. Hundreds of children's bodies piled high after nerve gas attacked them in Damascus, leaving up to 1,300 total people dead. Now, the world has looked on in horror as graphic images emerge showing the aftermath of a Dawn poison gas attack in the suburbs of Damascus that wiped out 1,300 people as they were sleeping in their beds. The Syrian activists are accusing President Assad's forces of launching the nerve gas attack in what could be the worst reported use of poison gas in that 2-year civil war. Activists said the rockets with chemical agents hit the Damascus suburbs before dawn. Just a horrible story there. The National Security Agency, the NSA, has declassified 3 secret court opinions showing how in one of surveillance programs it scooped up as many as 56,000 emails and other communications by Americans not connected to terrorism over 3 years, revealed the error to the court, which then ruled the actions unconstitutional and then fixed the problem. Let's check in with the expert on Homeland Security, Douglas Hagman. Douglas, once again, we find out something about the NSA.
Right, absolutely. And I think we've been pretty consistent. I've been pretty consistent on your program advising people that this is much larger operation than they're admitting. Of course, we've seen this evolve from, 2,700 emails or 2,700 instances of a breach to now this number. Of course, we have denials. The question really is who is watching the watchers? And the other part of this is the fact that this is all being done under executive order, and it certainly could be stopped in a manner that would be consistent with retaining our privacy as well as retaining our security.
Doug, with this, and they admitted they made a mistake, but they're probably doing things just like this all over again.
Well, certainly, and we've heard from we've seen this predicted way back in 1970 with Zbigniew Brzezinski writing in his book about the surveillance state, the technocratic state, and this happening. This, of course, being a larger objective of the globalist agenda here.
All right, thank you. By the way, police throughout the globe sometimes have been embarrassed to see online videos of their officers pepper spraying tied captives. In our age of mobile gadgets, the pictures can be uploaded online in just seconds, making supervisors to answer the questions. But now police may not need to fear scrutiny anymore. Apple has recently patented a piece of technology that would allow the authorities and police to block the data transmission, including video and phones, whenever they like. In a moment, we'll check in with Catherine Albrecht about that. Sid Bernstein, the concert promoter who staged early shows by the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, has died at the age of 95. He put together some great concerts. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg has announced on his Facebook profile that the formation of a partnership with Samsung Electronics, Nokia, Qualcomm, and others to make internet access available to everybody on the planet. The group intends to make the internet an option for the 5 billion people who simply don't have it. Only about 1/3 of the world's population has internet access. Lauren Weinstein, he means what he says. He's going to pull this off.
Well, you know, one would hope so, because obviously we want to get the internet to those billions of people that don't have it. Interestingly enough, the general reaction in the network community from this particular announcement has not been very positive. The reason is that if you actually look at the details of the proposal, it's very, very, very thin. There's no funding proposed. all of the partners so far are basically equipment manufacturers, no mobile carriers. You'll notice that Microsoft and Apple and Twitter and Google aren't signed on. And when you actually read the detailed proposal, such as it is, it's really pretty long on platitudes and pretty short on any actual thing to implement. So there is some concern that this is the kind of thing that has a lot of PR value, but how this would actually deploy, you know, because you to build those mobile systems in those underdeveloped parts of the world is going to require a lot of money. And unless, you know, Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg are planning to find sources for that money, this could be a lot of talk and not a lot of action.
Well, and most of these people, as you know, Lauren, they probably don't have the money to buy products that might be advertised on Facebook.
Well, not only that, they may not have the money to even get the kinds of mobile phones you would need take advantage of these mobile networks if you had a way to build those mobile networks in those places. So there's a lot of ifs, and I think that's why some people think that, you know, this may not turn out to be what it's supposed to be. But look, if he can make it happen, more power to him, but let's make sure we're not just dealing with hype.
Well, speaking of technology, you sound like you're right next door to me. Where are you?
We're running an experiment this evening with a different kind of digital phone line here.
It's working.
Good, huh?
Yeah, it does.
All right.
All right, Lauren, thanks. Lauren Weinstein, a German woman who lost her arm in a shark attack, has died 1 week after she was bit while snorkeling off Maui. The 20-year-old has been on life support. She died in a hospital there. Sad story. In the news, take a look at this picture. A mysterious sea creature featuring what appears to be a horns on his head was discovered in the advanced stages of decomposition along the shoreline of Spain. A woman first discovered the head and then found the body farther down the beach, the entire carcass with the head stretched 13 feet. I'm telling you, I'm taking a look at this, and unless it's a hoax, the thing's got horns. It looks like a dragon. Go take a look in the news at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, we talked about that one story where police officers may be able to just block data transmission of video and photos. Catherine Albrecht is with us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Catherine Albrecht with us, a consumer privacy expert. We're going to react to all kinds of things that are going on to nip at our privacy. Catherine, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, George. I'm doing great. Boy, it's been a roller coaster, hasn't it?
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I got to say, since 1999, I've been trying to wake people up about this privacy issue, and I think it's finally happened. I think people finally have woken up and gone, hey, hang on a second. There was this thing we used to have called privacy. Where the heck did it go? So I'm with you. I'm feeling optimistic. I think if we all figure this out, and if we all join together, that we have the power in the marketplace, we have the power in the ballot box, we have the power in so many different places, and I think it's just an issue of us starting to use it and get some of this privacy back.
I think so, too. Catherine, let's get your reaction, first of all, to this story where police or law enforcement might have the capability of simply shutting down video and photos whenever they like. This technology that Apple has available, they've patented it, they're going to be able to pull this off.
Jeez. Yeah, so the idea is that there would be an encoded signal that they could send through the airwaves, so just punch it into a device and send it out. Your phone would be programmed or would be set in advance technologically to listen for this signal, and if it ever hears the signal, it basically turns off certain features. So you can turn off the video recording mode, you can turn off the photo-taking mode, you can even turn off the sound ability of this phone and basically cause everybody's phone at a particular event to be unable to record or even unable to transmit information. And I have such mixed feelings about this because, first, let me tell you why Apple was promoting this in their patent. They said, well, when people go into theaters or they go to particular music events that there's copyrighted information occurring. There's copyrighted sound being transmitted.
Sure.
If you go in there. And, you know, one of the big things Hollywood faces nowadays is any kind of advanced screening or preview of a film. One person gets in there with a recording device, and then next thing you know, it's all over the internet, and they just blew their big opening night. So I can kind of understand a desire to want to say, hey, listen, this venue can't be recorded. And I have to say, as a privacy advocate, there's something very appealing about this idea. You know, if I'm having a wedding, and I'm Tina Turner, as you know, they flew drones over poor Tina Turner's wedding to spy on her from the sky. you know, you don't know if somebody in your private business meeting or somebody at your wedding or your kid's bar mitzvah, whatever it is, has a recording device, you know, is using their phone to record and surveil the event without your knowledge. You know, these things are little. You fit them in your pocket. There, nobody would know if you had it. So in a way, I can kind of see the appeal. Here's where it gets really creepy, though, is that Apple talks about in their patent that this would not be some signal in the sky that Apple would send out, but Apple would give the control over this to the venue, the people who run the venues, and then more disturbingly, they talk about giving this power to police and to law enforcement. And immediately what comes to mind is back in 2009, 2010, people may remember that there was an Iranian election in which Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was reelected. And the Iranian people went ballistic because there were some irregularities in that.
Yeah, they thought that the other guy won.
They did. So they took to the streets. I wouldn't say riots. It was actually fairly orderly protests. Well, here's where this gets interesting. The Iranian press is actually fairly tightly controlled. No big surprise there. What the police did and the paramilitary forces that came in to control the protesters was they made all of the journalists leave. So everybody with a camera, you know, with a journalist camera, a big honking camera, everybody with, you know, microphones, obvious members of the press were all ushered and herded out of there. And then the shooting began. And one young woman, a 26-year-old who's now fairly famous because of the horrible way in which she died, she was actually shot by members of the Iranian military. And even though they'd gotten rid of all of the press, which is what oppressive regimes do, right? They make everybody leave and they commit their atrocities. She was killed, and within seconds of her being shot in the heart by one of these paramilitary folks, everyone around pulled out their cell phones and took photographs and uploaded them instantly onto Twitter. And so they uploaded them all over the internet and then tweeted about it. So within seconds, the entire world was able to see what was happening there in Iran. Now, the reason this patent worries me is if you're going to round up all the police and get rid of all the microphones and the cameras, you can't go around the crowd and get everybody's cell phone out of their pocket. It'd be impossible. But all you'd have to do
is flip
the switch, you send the signal, and now all of those protesters are absolutely helpless at your mercy. You can shoot them all. You can then tell a totally different story in tomorrow's newspaper, and nobody would have any evidence to the contrary.
Apple admits that this could be used in covert police or government operations that may need complete blackout conditions. But as you well know, and as we've talked about, I mean, if this gets in the hands of the wrong person, they can do anything. What do you think Assad would do if he had this technology in Syria?
Yeah, and you can go on and on. You know, in North Korea, it's a crime to even own a cell phone. So I'm sure Kim Jong-un would love to have this technology. So if anybody did manage to sneak one into the country, it would just be disabled. So, yeah, there's huge downsides to this. You know, George, I think we're at this bizarre crossroads with these technologies because I got to be honest, though, if there were a way to disable Google Glass, you know, those Google Glasses that can record and listen and people walk around with them and they can see and spy everything you do, you know, I'd be tempted to push the button to say, not around me. I'll make a 50, you know, 100-foot barrier around myself.
Well, that's another question, too. I don't know what the distance is where they can shut you down.
Actually, the distance is scary because it's a cell phone signal. So you just call everybody's cell phone. You could do it from the other side of the globe.
Wow.
Yeah.
But just flip it and that's it.
That's right. You just say, hey, you know, I hear there's something going on there in Iran. Let's just turn off all their phones. Boom. And the entire country could be shut down. So nobody could record a thing. You could black out the whole nation.
What about sending a text message?
If you want to block that, you could do that too. See, that's the thing about these phones, George. People don't understand. They're not phones. They're computers.
They are little computers.
And they're incredibly powerful. And they've got the ability to program whatever the heck they want into there. And when you look at these patents, you know, this is not the only disturbing patent coming out from Apple. Apple came out with a patent also, which, you know, who knows if they're implementing it or not, but they talked about the ability to detect the vibrations of your phone, to tell if you're on a bus, on a train, on an airplane, on roller skates, kind of exaggerating there, but to figure out what mode of transportation you're actually in, and then turn on the microphone and also turn on the camera and take a couple of little snaps so they can try to determine where exactly you are and where you're going without your knowledge. They patented this. You know, turn on the sound, kind of, oh, I hear the rumble, must be the subway. Let's see, let's take a couple of snaps, send them home. You know, it phones home to the Apple headquarters without you even knowing it's done it, and then evaluates the vibration pattern, which, you know, they built that in so that it's the accelerometer, so that you could turn it sideways or upside down and it would reorient itself. But they're using it for all kinds of different stuff. So, you know, that's patented too. You say, well, just because they patented it, does it mean they're actually doing it? Not necessarily, but it means they're thinking about doing it, and they're spending an awful lot of money on lawyers and patent applications. And the one thing that the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office requires is for you to file a patent, it has to be actually doable. It can't just be an idea in your head.
Right.
You have to demonstrate to them that you have the ability to pull it off.
And make it. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, why does it seem that this technology is going faster and faster, and that their need to do all these heinous things seems to be going faster and faster?
Well, because we're kind of in this, you know, we're in this sort of informational arms race. It used to be, you know, we live in the information era. There was what, the Stone Age, the Bronze Age. You know, now we're up here into the information age, and knowledge truly is power. So whoever has the knowledge really holds the cards. And I think that's really why we're starting to see this stuff accelerate, because the more information, I mean, right now there's more information collected on this country or on this globe in 1 hour probably than in the entire, you know, history of everything up until probably the mid-1900s, you know, in one single hour. That's how much is being accumulated. I think these folks salivate at the idea of being able to grasp all of that information and the power that it represents. So on the one hand, you've got Iranian protesters who, for the first time in human history, were able to instantly get an oppressive action by a rotten government out to the whole world within seconds. On the other hand, now you've got the ability for somebody like the NSA or an organization like the NSA to now be able to literally watch and read the emails of millions of people.
Catherine, what's new with you these days?
My goodness, so much going on. I've got some good news. Can I share good news?
Oh, of course.
I love good news.
You need good news with what you went through.
Andrea Hernandez, the honor student that we have been helping out down in San Antonio, Texas, sent us some extremely good news today. And huge thanks and blessings out to all the listeners of Coast to Coast. I know we've talked about it here. That she is the student who, as you will recall, protested against that tracking device, the RFID tag, around the kids' necks. 4,200 kids in San Antonio being forced to wear remotely readable tracking devices. She resisted. They kicked her out of school. They said, we're not going to get rid of the program. Tough. You leave if you don't like it. So they tossed her out of school, away from all her friends. She mounted a lawsuit against them. And this summer, they announced that they were discontinuing the program, and we just found out today they're letting her back into the school.
Well, did she win, or did just the fear of the lawsuit make them do that?
You know, they've got their own, you know, I've won so many of these things, George, and they never come out and say, we won because we just couldn't stand the pressure of all the opposition. They always have another reason. They say, well, you know, it didn't work as well as we thought it would for maintaining attendance. So, yeah, we're just not going to be using it again.
That's exciting.
It is. It's great news. And in her particular case, this was really very much about her, that, you know, they didn't want this troublemaker on their campus. Now, she's an honor student. She's a brilliant, delightful young woman. She's very articulate and obviously a very strong-willed and just a lovely person. And I think it's a blessing to them, and I think they did the right thing. They've got a winner on their hands, and I think they do well to have her back at the school, and she'll do them, I think, credit as she graduates from there.
Well, one day, Catherine, they're going to try to put those chips in us. I know they are.
Yeah, it's coming. You know, the latest thing out on RFID, I got two horrible RFID microchip updates. One of them, this proposal for an RFID ring. So this is the idea that you'd actually have a ring on your finger, and in the ring would be your little RFID microchip, and it would transmit your unique ID number to everything you touch. And so you want to open your office door, you just wave your hand. And of course, you know, anytime we talk about putting chips in people, the hand always comes to the front, because I believe it's tied in with the mark of the beast that talks about, you know, a time when nobody can buy or sell without a number, and that's going to be on their hand or their forehead, and that's, of course, that's 666. So you got RFID tags now. They're talking about them in wristwatches. Once again, let me get back to Apple. Apple wants to come out with an RFID-enabled wristwatch that you would actually wear.
Dick Tracy.
Yeah, that's the idea. You just kind of walk around with your thing on your finger. Google's Motorola division, of course, wants to have these swallowable RFID tags. They call it vitamin authentication. They've actually gotten FDA approval for this thing. It's you get a handful of pills. You'd swallow one each day. As the pill goes into your stomach, it interacts with the battery, like a battery, with the acid in your stomach.
Amazing.
And you become an RFID antenna.
A walking,
body.
Yeah, you're a walking antenna. I want to talk with you about Google Glasses, and we'll take some phone calls when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Catherine Albrecht with us. Catherine, during the break, one of our listeners sent me an email of a story of a person who tried to kidnap his daughter from school, and police were able to catch her because she was being tracked by the school. So I guess it does have some benefits, doesn't it?
Well, you know, but it goes the other way too, George, because the last thing you want to do on something that is valuable, whether it's a physical object or someone that you love, is put a tracking device on them, because the bad guys are the first people to actually access that information. You know, one of the things I've recently done, I interviewed Cindy Southworth from the National Network to End Domestic Violence, and we talked about the kind of scenarios that she sees all the time, where there is a woman, typically it is a woman and her children, who are have a restraining order out and are in hiding from an abuser, so, you know, in a domestic violence situation, where if they're found or they're caught, it could actually mean death. And in those cases, those women's shelters, they have, you know, very secure locks and gates to make sure that nobody can get inside. But if a child is wearing a tracking device, it's actually possible for the perpetrator, the abuser, to drive down the street and identify right through a brick wall where that child and her family or his family is located. So she was actually scaring the bejeebers out of me, making the hair stand up on the back of my neck, talking about what these kinds of people would do. They typically are obsessed. They are the very first to adopt new technologies. We know this because the GPS trackers that were being put on cars that, you know, some of us have only been hearing about in the last couple of years, the domestic violence people, the stalkers and the abusers, were the very first people to adopt that. And they were putting it, you know, there was one guy in California who put it on his girlfriend's car. And it was the first, you know, major case that anybody had ever even heard of this technology. And he'd been tracking her for months, you know, and calling her up. Hey, did you have a nice time at the mall yesterday with your friends? And, you know, totally freaking her out because he was watching. So, you know, this kind of technology, if you put a remotely readable tracking signal on a child, you're going to make that child an absolute prey for anyone who wants to find them, literally through the walls. And in fact, Andrea Hernandez in San Antonio, Texas, this awful program that I've been fighting against all year, with 4,200 kids, I actually flew down to San Antonio, and I interviewed the several people. One guy I interviewed was a counselor who works with convicted sex offenders, and he chilled me. He's worked with over 200 of these offenders. He said that they would be the very first people to adopt this technology. And what they would do, they would identify one or several children that they want to target, and then they would be able, from the, you know, creepy comfort of their own homes, to tell when those children were walking, you know, down the street in front of their house or taking a shortcut through the alley. I mean, it was really chilling. So I'm not a big believer that the way to keep kids safe is to put tracking devices on them. I think it's got way too much potential for abuse.
To the phones we go. Let's go to Jeffrey in San Francisco to get things started. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, it's good to be on. I was just wondering, what's the potential of the terrorist using, like, potentially hacking this technology and using it to stop people from calling if an incident would occur on U.S. soil?
That's a brilliant idea, and a brilliant concern that you're raising, because even with the smart meters on the smart homes, one of the concerns that's come up just in the last couple of weeks is that, you know, it's the same idea. If someone wants to break into your house, they don't have to fish around and try to figure out how to turn off your lights. They can just do it remotely and then bust in. So in the same way, if you wanted to, you know, not just a terrorist, but even, you know, some of these theater events that have occurred, you know, you could simply make the whole theater just go dark, and no one in the theater would be able to dial 911 or get any kind of assistance, and it just creates a you know, a situation where people would be sitting ducks. So, you know, it's interesting, George, because as I'm thinking about this, we may need to get back to the point where we have a backup to our phones. you know, I've got a digital camera from before there were cameras on your phones, and it's in perfectly good working order, and I think I'm going to hang on to it. So at least I can take, you know, capture video and take photographs, even if someone disables my phone remotely.
Well, you know, most people are doing away with their landline phones. I keep mine in my house, and, you know, I've got fax machines and everything else. But, you know, I think one day, you know, the time's going to come where you're going to need a landline.
I think so, too. And in fact, I have that happen to me all the time, George, because I live in New Hampshire, where we get these horrible blackouts. And sometimes we do have problems with the phone system. And if you get a blackout for 4 or 5 days, there's no way to recharge your phone. So even if your phone works great for an hour or two, or even 4 or 5, eventually your cell phone, if you don't have a way to charge it, it's dead. But every time that happens, I can pick up my landline because it uses a different form of power that never goes out. I've never once had my phone go out, and I get a dial tone and I can make phone calls. And, you know, all my friends say, well, how are you using the phone? And I say, well, it's just plugged into the wall. And they say, well, we've got a landline too, but ours isn't working. And the reason, folks, is if your landline phone is a portable phone that doesn't have a cord on it, it's not going to work when the power goes out. But if you have a corded headset, and you can pick these up like at Walgreens for, I don't know, $6. I mean, they're everywhere. Get yourself a cheap corded handset. Even if you don't use it, keep it in a drawer, because if you ever have a power outage, that's going to work when everything else gives out on you.
Let's go to Charles in Baltimore, Maryland. Good morning, Charles. You're up.
Yes, thank you very much. Can you hear me? Okay?
I sure can, Charles.
Thank you very much. Okay, this new watch that Apple is coming out with, will the thing be accessible? Will blind people be able to, you know, have talking features on it? If not, why not? Things, technology-wise, are getting harder and harder for blind people to use.
Sure,
it's,
I agree.
Even sighted people are having difficulty. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think that there's so much that potential for what technology can do for the disabled community. I would like to see a little bit more of this attention going in that direction. But, you know, I think the way these companies are all thinking is they're looking to maximize their profit, and one of the ways that they do that is building in, you know, all kinds of nifty features, and most of those are surveillance features, and I'm not necessarily sure that that's a big surveillance target for them, to be honest. I mean, the minute blind people became a target for, you know, that that Apple or Facebook or whoever specifically wanted to surveil, you better believe you're going to be swimming in wonderful products they're going to offer you. And until that happens, I think you're just going to have to really speak out. The squeaky wheel gets the grease, so continue to speak out. That's a good move.
Why all the hoopla over Google glasses, Catherine?
Because they're scary, George. I mean, talk about the ultimate just science fiction concept from when we were kids, the idea that you could actually record everything that you see, that your entire life could become a video or a film, or you could have a running dialogue and record all of it. You know, the thing about Google Glasses, if people don't know what it is, this is this expensive new thing Google has come out with. You put them on your eyes. They don't even have lenses. It's just like a little frame. And over on the side, there's a little screen you can watch, and then it's got a little camera. So it's just like out of Terminator, you know, when Arnold Schwarzenegger is looking at the things, and they go, and then he kind of like gets to zoom in and get information about them. So that's the idea. The problem with the Google Glasses is that as you're wearing glasses, you are walking around internal environments, and you're taking images and sound and recording. You basically become a walking bug, a walking surveillance device yourself. And so you've got Google, you've got Microsoft and Facebook and Apple and Yahoo and Bing and all these companies that have been named by the PRISM scandal, so we know that they're collecting tons of data. They have really been limited up until now to what we do on the internet. So if you want to know what people are up to and you're one of these big companies, then you can tap into that internet stream and you can get a lot, right? Same with the NSA.
Sure.
You can tap into their internet stream and you get a lot. But there's only so much life that occurs on the internet, regardless of what some addicts might think. There's a real life out there that those of us who are not totally addicted to the internet, you know, we walk and we talk and we go places and we go into buildings, we go into our homes, and they can't reach us there. They can't follow us there. They can't surveil us there. They might be able to GPS track physically where we are, but they can't see where we are or hear what we're saying or look around and be a part of that environment the way that Google Glass will make possible. So I refer to this big thing that's being built as the global brain. And every time we go on the internet, we're contributing to this global brain. Well, the brain is becoming very hungry, and it's no longer content to simply know what you do online. It now wants to know what you do in the rest of your life as well. And Google Glass creates that potential for all of that data collection to go up into the cloud. Their example, you go skiing. Well, that sounds pretty cool, right? You want to catch that downhill slalom.
Sure.
So you say, hey, Google Glass, record this. And it turns on and it records your ski trip. Well, there's no privacy invasion there. What happens on the other hand, you're in a nightclub or you're at a romantic candlelit dinner and you go, Google Glass, record this. And, then you wind up in an argument with your
ex. Or whatever.
Whatever. I mean, you can think of even more invasive and private kinds of things that could be recorded. And, I think that's really where the concern is, because that the thing that you record there is not just yours. It's going on to the cloud, and the cloud belongs to the watchers.
But, I mean, they're obvious when you put them on. Everybody knows what they are, right?
Yes. And right now, Google's done a really great job of making it the coolest thing since sliced bread, that everybody wants these things. But, there's a case in France where a store owner actually beat up a guy who walked in wearing the Google glasses and said, you can't be wearing that in here. And, I don't want people getting beaten up. On the other hand, we need a way to kind of draw the line. No.
Are we going to have signs on the door like they do with concealed weapons? You can't take a gun in here? They may say you can't wear Google glasses.
Yeah, well, but if they're gonna say no Google glasses, they're gonna have to say no smartphones too, because they've got the same capability.
Yeah, they do. It's just different.
Video, and with that again ties back to the whole theme tonight. That's why Apple has at least patented this idea that you can just blast everybody's phones and turn them off. I'd like to see the Google glasses come with that capability, to be honest. And, wouldn't it be cool if we could make it such that anytime the Google glasses are aimed specifically at you, you can have a privacy setting, almost like a do not call list. I'm the do not record list. And when you aim that thing at me, it just goes blank. That'd be working for me.
Let's go to Crystal in Seattle, Washington, where I just came back from. Hi, Crystal. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you, George, for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to call tonight, especially to talk to the lady Catherine.
Yep, she's with you.
And I think it's important for people to know what's going on with the Homeland Security and all the surveillance and data collection on people. I've been a 9/11 activist since 2000 and probably 2004 or 2003, and I've been under surveillance for a very long time. Just within the past, since 2011, I've been targeted for burglaries. Another activist I know had told me that there was another person he knew that got a lawyer and had an out-of-court settlement. And, of course, I understand there's gag orders on all this stuff to keep it hushed up. The burglaries I've been targeted for have been relentless. They've even come in during the night. I begged my younger brother to spend one night with me, and he heard a noise while I was asleep and looked out, and there was a white van with a bunch of antennas on it just outside. And this was in a remote rural area that I was living in eastern Washington near the Canadian border.
Why you, though, Crystal? Why'd they single you out?
I've been a 9/11 activist. I've distributed 9/11 deception dollars.
Do you think that was the reason?
On my car, and I'm politically incorrect. Also, one of my girlfriends that lives in Tukwila, right below in the Homeland Security building there, she has been targeted for being burglarized, and even her car was stolen.
Well, let me ask you this, Catherine. We only have a few minutes left. People are targeted because of their political persuasions, because of their views. There's no question about that. We just saw what the IRS has been doing. How do you stop that?
Well, there's kind of two forms of surveillance, isn't there, and two forms of messing with people. One of them, they can know everything they want to know about you without ever even tipping their hand that they're watching. They can simply put tracers on your phone calls and capture all of your internet traffic and you'd never be the wiser. So to the extent that anybody is actually seeing something happening around them, I think that there's an additional component to that where it's not just wanting to know about you, but it's actually wanting to make you know that this is happening. So I think there's almost an intimidation factor going on when this happens to people. And, you know, to be honest, I think there's probably a spiritual component too. We could do a whole 3-hour show on that, but I think there's a whole lot going on when people have those experiences.
I want to have you on for a full show when the sign of the beast pops up.
We got to do it. It's coming. It's coming.
Let's go to Jeff, Houston, Texas. Hey, Jeffrey, go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple things to mention.
Sure thing.
Back in 2002 and 2003, the government actually already had the ability to I'm getting confused now that I'm on the phone. Sorry. There's a memorandum of understanding with these companies that they could go ahead and shut down all the cell phones or also turn on the camera or microphone feature of the cell phones and capture any information that they wanted. And the biggest problem that they had was the short battery life back then. So they had a little antenna that they started putting in phones that was similar to the RFID chip, only when you put a narrow beam microwave at it, then it would actually create between 700 and 1,300 milliamps of direct current for the phone.
So can I give you an update on that?
Yeah, go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah, let me give you an update. So just this week, big story out that University of Washington researchers have found a way to power RFID, including cell phone signals, including text messages and such through your cell phone, and also just tracking RFID surveillance tags through the air, literally gaining power from TV station transmissions. And the stuff that's already floating around us, all this EMF, radio frequency energy in the air, being enough to actually provide power. It's something they've been trying to do this for decades, but now they've actually found a way to suck power out of the air and use it to power these devices. And they said that they would be able to use this to use your cell phone or use your cell phone potentially to identify you, even if you take the battery out. Because you no longer even need the battery, you can get the power from the air. So it's happening. It's real. It's here. It's unbelievable, but it's here.
Let's get out your websites, Catherine. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, I want to remind everybody, please, if you're using Bing, Yahoo, or Google, switch over to startpage.com, the private search engine I helped to create, startpage.com. Startmail.com coming out soon. We just closed our beta testing, but we're getting into reservations for new accounts. We're so excited. It's going really well. It's Startmail, private email. My website, my radio show, is my name, KatherineAlbrecht.com, or easier still, my initials, KMAshow.com.
And how are you feeling these days?
I'm feeling great, actually. I'm actually feeling really super. We just added a bunch of new affiliates to the radio station, so that's going strong.
Good.
6 years out there doing that. I got to say, my faith in Christ, my faith in just goodness has been so strengthened by what I've been through with the cancer and all of that. And I'm excited that the country is waking up to all of this privacy stuff. I think it is so exciting. I'm so optimistic because finally now people are getting a clue what's going on. And, you know, that's the first step. It's like anything else. You got to know you have a problem in order to be able to fix it. And now I'll tell you, folks, we know we've got a problem, and I think it's a good thing that we know.
Catherine, we'll talk to you soon enough, my dear. Catherine Albrecht, your website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, we talk about the Anunnaki of Nibiru. Stand by for that.